continue on with the topic of, well, actually the sermon is about Ecclesiastes. Obviously, even though this be the second part of this sermon, we will not be able to look at the book as a whole. We will not be able to break down all the various elements of it. I'm addressing really just one portion of the book. One thing that we see mentioned over and over again in the book, and see how it fits and how it can be useful for us. But as I mentioned last week, it was necessary for me, before I started into that, to rehabilitate the book. Now, what do we mean by rehabilitate the book? As I mentioned, that is a term used in court where you might rehabilitate somebody's testimony, where somebody says something, somebody else counters it, and then the attorney comes back with evidence to support the first testimony, showing that it was valid. Why would we have to rehabilitate a book in the Bible? Or why would we have to even try to show that the part of it that we're going to be looking at, or any part of it, is valid for us to look at? Because there are those who look rather askew at the book of Ecclesiastes. And some are very capable preachers. Some are people who are very strong in the faith, but they tend to look at that book off a little bit for two reasons. One of them is the fact of the guy that wrote it, and the other being the one thing that I'm going to be talking about primarily tonight when we get to it, something that is said over and over again in the book, that is kind of a phrase that would seem to be unacceptable, a questionable phrase. So they look at it for those various reasons. But I want to point out that 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16 points out that all the old scriptures were given by inspiration. And they are useful for learning and for teaching. Well, certainly from the very most ancient times, Ecclesiastes was recognized as one of the scriptures. Certainly that would qualify among those books that was given by inspiration. I might also point out that people look askew at the book sometimes because Solomon wrote it, and yet we never find a problem with somebody looking at at Proverbs and wanting to throw out Proverbs. Now, we know that Solomon went astray. We know that there were problems with Solomon, but as we look at Ecclesiastes, we really do not know at what point in his life he wrote this. Did he write this book before he went astray? Did he write it after he went astray and write in the last days of life? Now, some of you here that have faced grave illness know yourself that when somebody has finally come down to what they consider to be quite possibly the end of the road, a person has an indication or an inclination to see things differently. To understand things differently, to see things clearer that they had not quite been able to see before. So we don't know. But it was written, according to Timothy, by inspiration, and we do not throw out the other book. Now, one of the big objections to this book by people is the fact that we have eat and drink that pops up so often. Eat and drink. Now, one of the problems with that people have is that every time they see that term drink, there is a tendency to be concerned about it. I'm not going to go back and look at the passages we saw last week. This part right now is review. I've obviously got to get past last week, or next week I'll have to say, well, I want to do the second part of Ecclesiastes tonight, because I did the first part twice. No, what we look at here, though, is we find that that term pops up over and over, and then especially people look at that term in light of 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 32. What we saw last week was that the term eat and drink is not inherently bad. What we saw was that is just basically a term that referred to taking in nutrition the two different ways that people did it. Now, how can we say that? How do we know that? That there's nothing inherently bad in that term? Well, we saw, as we looked at the passages, for example, Matthew chapter 11, verses 18, Jesus ate and drank. We looked at Acts chapter 10, and we find that after his death, the apostles with Jesus, together, they ate and drank with Jesus. This is a term, this is a phrase that is used to refer to taking in nutrition. Taking a meal. The meal came in two forms. There was two various aspects of it. There was both those things that one might drink, and there was those things that one might eat. And the way they did it, explained it, was they used both terms. So it's not inherently bad. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 22, Paul gets after the church at Corinth about how they're taking the Lord's Supper wrong. He says, what, have you not houses to eat and drink in? Now see, Paul didn't have a problem with them eating and drinking in their houses. Now, certainly some of these people were drinking the wrong thing and drinking too much of the wrong thing at their so-called Lord's Supper, doing it wrong. But just inherently, there was nothing wrong with the term eat and drink, because Paul said, do it at your own home. He didn't say eat at your own home, make sure you don't drink anything. He says, what, have you not houses to eat and drink in? So this was just a phrase that was used. Now sometimes people have a problem with it, because of the fact that we look at Matthew chapter 24 and we look at Acts or Luke chapter 17, and this is a term that is used in talking about the old times, the times before the flood, and they were eating and drinking in the times down at Sodom, they were eating and drinking, Sodom and Gomorrah, and so forth. So, the people before the flood were bad, Sodom and Gomorrah, so this has got to be inherently bad. Remember, it also says, and they were buying and selling, and they were marrying, and they were giving in marriage. None of those things are wrong. What was he saying? They weren't expecting calamity. They were just doing the normal things of life. Going on like nothing was going to happen. So the fact that we might find it in Luke 17 and Matthew 24, in what you might say is bad company, does not say it is inherently bad. Now, I want to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and this is a part of it here that certainly is troubling many people. We find that Paul goes through all the various things that he has faced, all the things he has had to deal with. And he says here in chapter 15, verse 32, 1 Corinthians, if in the manner of men I have fought the beast at Ephesus, what advantage is it to me if the dead do not rise? Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. So people look at that, well, obviously what Paul is talking about here is something bad. It's the same two words that are used over and over again in Ecclesiastes. So, well, if he's talking about something, but we've already seen there's nothing inherently bad in those two words. Jesus did it. What is Paul doing here? Now, it is easy to look at this and say, and it is kind of the standard to say, well, that what Paul is doing there is denouncing the Epicurean lifestyle. And I mentioned last week, without actually reading the passage, no, Paul is not denouncing the Epicurean lifestyle. Paul is quoting from the Old Testament, from a period of time long before the Epicurean lifestyle existed. Paul oftentimes in his writings will throw in a verse or a saying that's a quote from the Old Testament. What is Paul quoting here? He is quoting Isaiah chapter 22. He's looking at Isaiah, and he is quoting. Well, did I write down? I checked this just before I came. Seem to be looking at the wrong place today, though. But anyway, what he's looking at here is the problems that were going to come upon the children of Israel. There we're going to have, well, actually this is the right place, 22 verse 12. They've got the enemy has surrounded the capital, surrounded the city. Now here's what God wants. And in that day, the Lord God of hosts called for weeping and for mourning, for baldness, for girding with sackcloth. So he called for people to shave their heads in mourning, put on sackcloth to weep. What he wants is the people lamenting in repentance. God has called for that. But what are they doing instead? Now this is one of those places to where the eating and drinking probably refers to feasting and not just the normal day-to-day activity. But what do they do instead? But instead, joy and gladness, slaying oxen, killing sheep, eating meat, drinking wine, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. See, it's a direct quote from Isaiah. What he's contrasting there is, God says to do one thing, there's one thing that's appropriate, and you are ignoring that, and you're just, well, let's just have a party and forget about it. Paul is talking about that in 1 Corinthians, pointing out the fact that these people were doing something that they, well, God called for one thing, but they're doing something else instead. Their eating and drinking is instead of what ought to be done, in place of what ought to be done. And Paul was saying, says, I would not have faced the beast, I would not have faced danger in Ephesus if there was no eternal life. I might just as well, like they say, why don't I just do this instead? Paul is contrasting all he has endured with this idea of, well, nothing we can do about it. Let's just eat and drink, nothing we can do about it. What we're going to see is when we look in Ecclesiastes, the eating and drinking there is not in place of something good. It is always connected with something good. Tied in with something good. Part of something good. Now, what are some of the factors that we can look at here? In Ecclesiastes, it is not feasting instead of doing good. We're going to see that. And this is their problem. This is what they were doing in that passage in Isaiah. Now here's factors that help us understand Ecclesiastes better. As was mentioned last week, the first thing we need to understand is that this book is about things under the sun. It is used 30 times in the book, which basically means it is about things on this earth. Does that discount the book? Does that say, well, it doesn't count? There's no use to us. It's no good to us. Proverbs, and we looked at the verses last week, is about helping people to do the things that make life better on this earth. The contract that God made with the Hebrews dealt with the temporal, I will reward you with things of this earth if you do these good things for me. Proverbs, well, also in Psalms, talking about this man of God who serves God. We looked at these passages, like I said last week. They then will be able to enjoy their food and to eat and drink, do these various things. The reward being upon this earth. So, this should not be any great problem to us. If we understand that he is not necessarily talking about, although the things he says can help us in life and live better and thereby get to heaven, but he's talking about how to be the right kind of person, a good person on earth. So we understand that. The next thing we need to understand that is a key to this book, all is vanity. Which translates, which means brief passing of little lasting value. It is used 27 times. This is not the vanity of looking in the mirror and thinking, well, I need to take a selfie and send it out to everybody. I wouldn't want them to miss this. This is like a person say, well, you might see on the news, and several people from the community tried to put sandbags up on the ditch, but it was all in vain. It overflowed. In the end, it really didn't matter. In the end, it didn't count. That's the vanity he is talking about here. So the writer recognizes that all is vanity, and this intense how he looks at all the things that he's going to be talking about. All things are brief and passing, and in the long run, all these different factors of life that people count as being so big don't really count. And here are the factors that make things to be all of vanity. One is death. Ecclesiastes 1:11, Ecclesiastes 7:2, Ecclesiastes 12:7, passages that were used at Billy's funeral in pointing out it is better to go to the house of mourning than to the place of mirth, the party, because it reminds us that all will come to that end. So, death is one of the things that makes all things vanity, brief, not counting. And this, well, I'll talk about this more in a second, time allowing, but it probably won't. Next, all things are transitory. Woe comes. Bad things happen. And they happen on an ongoing basis. And you can figure on them happening, and that's just the way it works. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 13 and 14, consider the work of God, who can make straight what he has made crooked. In the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversary consider, surely God has appointed one as well as another. See, both are going to come. And I think some of us here that have dealt with major illnesses in recent times have probably taken this verse. This is a good verse. We have taken it to heart, combined with what Job said. Hey, God has given me a lot of great stuff for a long time. If he chooses to let something that I don't like happen, how can I complain about that? I wasn't complaining when he was giving me all the good stuff. That verse right there is in Ecclesiastes. It's a good verse. There's a lot to be said for it. But all things are transitory. All things pass. The passage that was used at Billy's funeral, one of the passages. Ecclesiastes in chapter 3. Where we're writing there, the writer was talking about the fact that there's a season, there is a time for everything. There is a time to be born and a time to die, time to plant, a time to be plucked up what was planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, time to gather stones, a time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing, time to gain, a time to lose, a time to keep, time to throw away, a time to tear, a time to sow, keep silence and to speak, a time of love, a time to hate, a time of war, a time of peace. He said, all right, look down the line here. That we have included in here death. We have included mourning in here. We have included weeping in here. We have included loss in here. See, he recognizes that all these things come to life, in cycle. Now, considering that, that changes how one looks at all the other things in the world. A young person who is healthy and well and who is 22 years old might be thinking about all their great plans, the foreign countries they're going to see, the great job that they are going to have, all of these things that they are going to have someday. When one recognizes that all things are transitory, you see it all in a different light. So he recognizes that all things are and he also recognizes that old age and infirmity come. And this is one of the limiting factors, that it is going to come to everybody. And therefore, there are things that we need to get done while we can get them done. And things to enjoy while we can. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, talking about, he says, remember the Creator in the days of thy youth, starting at verse 1, before the difficult days come. Is there anybody here that stumbled across the difficult days yet? Most of you that are over 40, which includes everybody, has done it. You've stumbled across the difficult days, haven't you? So remember the days that before the difficult days come. And this affects what he's going to write about elsewhere. This is part of that transitory. And the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. Is there anybody here, and I know there is, some who really looking at it, unfortunately, and know some of your relatives, I've seen it come, them come to a time when, looking at their years, if somebody tell them you got 5 years left of life, it's kind of a case of, oh man, that long? Are sure we can't make that a little shorter? Why? Because I have no pleasure in them. Now, that's not the case where most of us are here yet. But that's the case where, like, the brother was out there in Selma, sitting on the front row, who was well up, it was a World War II veteran, the man who was suffering, and such, and the preacher was standing up there, and he was saying, we'll all die someday, and the brother shouted out, and it can't be soon enough. The day will come when you will have no pleasure in your years, potentially. It can happen. It does happen. And why don't you have pleasure in your years? When the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are not darkened, the clouds do not return after the rain. The days, okay, basically you're talking about you're down all the time. You can't see. The vision's not good. The day the keeper of the house trembles, that refers to your legs. The strong men bow down when the grinders cease and they are few. That's talking about your teeth. When those you look through the window grows dim, when you can't see anymore, your eyes are going bad on you. When the doors are shut in the streets, basically you can't hear anything anymore. When it comes to that time, you're not having pleasure in life. So he says, consider the fact that that is going to happen, so don't blow it when you're young. Have you ever known any young people that go around, talk about all the time, oh, woe is me, man, life is just so, oh man, nothing's fair. Have you ever known young people that are just kind of grouchy and down and feel beat up all the time? What Solomon is saying is, this is the time you've got a chance right now to feel good. Don't blow it by making yourself feel bad when you don't have to. Because the time's going to come when you've really got things to cry about. When you've really got things to cry about. So that's what he's saying there. So these are things that... now also we look at the experience of Solomon. And these things I will not all read because our time is quickly passing. But he points out that he tried to find... He had a lot of wisdom, so he wanted to understand every facet of life, whether it be good or bad. And he wanted to try to find where is happiness in life. So he tried great accomplishment. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 4. And what he found was, man, that made me feel terrible in the end. Because I've got all this good stuff, then it dawned on me that when I die, the next guy that gets it's probably going to blow it. Which did happen with his son? Which happened? Yeah, you have, how many of you see the old cartoons, the man standing there with the sun, all these smokestacks, someday all this will be yours. But Dad, I want to be a professional golfer. Why? I've known men that have saved things to be a legacy. I'll tell you something about legacies. I've seen legacies. You hang around a gun store long enough, you see legacies. You see a man come walking in with a 03 Springfield. He says, this is something, my dad had this in the closet. I think it's some kind of an old army rifle. And he gave it to me before he died. And, you know, can I get anything for this? I'd like to take my wife to Vegas for a weekend. What's this thing worth? There's a legacy. That's how legacies really work. See, Solomon recognized that. Read Ecclesiastes. Go back here to Ecclesiastes 2 verses 1. And you see, and possessions. Same thing. Wisdom and knowledge. He says you're not going to find happiness with knowledge. Because if you're smart, if you really have a lot of knowledge, you're smart enough to know you're going to get sick and die someday. And you can lose everything you've got. And there's thieves trying to get it while you're alive. So the more you know, the more you fear. The more you know, the more you fear. It'd be kind of like the situation of a man in a combat zone in the foxhole there, down inside the foxhole, and the other man says, "Put your head up. The enemy might be sneaking up on us." And the guy says, "No, I won't do it." He says, "Why not? I'm afraid I might see him." You're better, you know. The more you know, the more you fear. If somebody has a disease within them, and I keep on going back to these examples because it fits with Ecclesiastes, and that's the only reason really, not because of our circumstances. Simple truth of the business is, until you start hurting, were you worried about that disease before some doctor found it and told you had it? No! The more you know, the more you fear. Okay, so that's one of the things that he realized he came to find out. Possessions, wisdom, and knowledge. He says, then I hated life. Despised all these different things. Looked on life, says, what's the use at one point? And then he starts arriving at the right conclusions. And I do have time to get into those. That's what today's all about. So when did he write this? I don't know. It may well be that he wrote this in his final days. If you consider the context, he had what I might, if I might resort to secular example, a rosebud moment. He had a rosebud moment. What is a rosebud moment? In the great classic movie, Citizen Kane, the man who was so wealthy he had thousands and thousands of pieces of furniture collected from all over Europe in his storage room. He was a kingmaker. He was one of the most powerful men on earth. As he's laying on his deathbed, the last word he speaks is rosebud. And throughout the entire movie, and that's how the movie's, they're trying to figure out who is Rosebud. And then in the end, the reporters are gathered at his place saying, well, I guess we'll never know much about him. They're walking out. The workmen are throwing all this thousands of pieces of furniture that he has collected into the furnace. One thing that is thrown into the furnace is a little sled. And as the fire melts the paint, the camera goes to it, and written on that sled is Rosebud. The last time he was happy in his life was when he was a kid playing on his sled before the car came and picked him up and took him to his rich parent that took him to all this success. So that's why I say this might be Solomon's Rosebud moment. I don't know. But anyway, now I want to go on here. He did all these things to see what's good and evil. Well, let's go down here and I want to look, see what he found. What Solomon found was that peace and satisfaction are not in great accomplishments, in great goods, or in excesses, we see that peace and satisfaction are in the common things of life that God makes available to all of His people. That's what he saw. And what are those things? Well, we come down the line and we see. What we're going to be seeing is that eating and drinking are always tied with something good. They're always tied with something good. For example, as we look at this, in the various passages that we're going to find connected with that, let's go to Ecclesiastes in chapter 2. By the way, this particular Bible up here is having a little difficulty in separating the pages, but Ecclesiastes in chapter 2. I'm going to go down here, and we see this repeated over and over. Nothing is better for a man that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy the good of his labors. You see, we're not talking about a guy living a party lifestyle. We're talking about a person who is enjoying the benefits of what he's worked for. This also I saw was from the hand of God. He's saying it comes from God. It's what God gives. Now, if we come to the New Testament, is this a foreign concept? Jesus says, give us this day our daily bread. Paul writes about if you have food and clothed with these things, be content. This is exactly what he is saying when he's talking about eating and drinking in this case. We come to down the line and we see this. And we have to even find other passages where he specifically talks about doing good. Let's go to Ephesians in chapter 5. Verse 18, here is what I have seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink, enjoy the good of his labor, that he toils under the sun for all the days of his life for what is given is, for this is his heritage. Heritage from who? Well, the other passage says it's his heritage from God. It is a good thing when a guy can enjoy the benefits of his hard work. He's working hard and he can enjoy the benefits of it. Labor is good. Labor is certainly praised. Look at verse 12 of chapter 5. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of riches will not permit him to sleep. So he's not saying eating and drinking as a feast. If you are able to have a good, honest job and go home and sit in your house and enjoy the benefits of it, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Well, I'm going to move on to other ones here because we're going to be missing this here pretty soon. Time is quickly running out. All these good things come from God. This is something else we miss. So obviously we are not talking about banqueting. We are not talking about debauchery here. Verse 24 of chapter 2, Ecclesiastes, we already read it. Nothing is better for man that he should eat and drink, for his soul enjoy the good of his labor. It is from the hand of God. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Verse 13, also every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. It comes from God. Chapter 5, verse 18, we just looked at that. Now let's go to chapter 9, verse 7, and see what it says here. Go, eat your bread with joy, drink your wine with a merry heart. God has accepted your works. Let your garments always be white. Let your head lack no oil. Live joyfully. Look at this part here. Don't miss this part here. Live joyfully with a wife you have loved all the days of your vain life, which he has given you unto the Son. For all the days of your vain, this is your portion in life. This is the labor, in the labor you've performed under the sun. This is what you get. Live joyfully with your wife. Put on your good clothes. What does Jesus say? If you're fasting, don't look like you're fasting. Go ahead and put the oil on your face. Put your good clothes on. Go out. He says here, wear nice clothes. Go ahead and put the oil on your face. Enjoy your meals. This is the portion that God gives you. This is from God. Because you have worked hard. You're laboring. You're doing a job. This is all contrasted. Again, we see the wife of your youth. We saw that just now. We can see it again. Live joyfully with the wife of thy youth. So he's praising marriage here. Praising staying with this one woman. Now rejoice. We see this over and over again. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 12. We see mirth is actually spoken of well. In Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verses 15 through 17. But this isn't the mirth he tried earlier. Mirth for its own sake. This is mirth, which basically means rejoice. Now, doesn't the apostle teach us rejoice evermore? Mirth with the understanding sickness is going to come, death is going to come. The mirth is in, you're with your wife of your youth, you've got a plate of food, you've worked hard. You look at the group right here. You live this so often on Sundays when some of you stop off at the various restaurants. The folks right here know where the restaurants are in town. You know where they are in town. Are you wild party people? No. What are you doing? You are enjoying the benefits that God has given you for your labors. You already understand this inside. You're already living it. Wisdom is good. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 11 through 12. Chapter 2, verse 13. He praises wisdom. Talks about how good wisdom is. We can find one passage in here where he talks about that there's really nothing better than that we would do good all of our days and enjoy these things, but do good of all of our days. So we're looking at these passages, and what are we seeing? We're not talking about debauchery. We're not talking about an Epicurean lifestyle. We're talking about being able to appreciate what we have from God as a result of honest labor. That's what he's talking about. And what he's saying is, I tried great wealth. I tried big buildings. I tried all these things. And in the end, I was able to understand the happiness isn't in those things. The happiness is in the things that you can all have and you do enjoy in your houses with your food and your family and things together. Now, I want to conclude a bit late, but I want to conclude nonetheless with this. I did a funeral many years ago now, probably about 20 years ago now. I assisted in a funeral for a member of the church, a man who was by no means a scholar, a simple fellow, crippled from an accident when he was very young, walked with a bad limp. He was in his 60s and he was still working as a ditch tender for the irrigation district out there in the 100-degree sun, shoveling mud in the ditches to try to keep them from overflowing in the summertime. He was a volunteer fireman. He was not a scholar by any means. Probably might not have even finished high school. Did all these good things. Always had a smile on his face. And we were at his house, various gatherings for dinner, to where the volunteer firemen would be there, and we were able to be there among them and such. At the funeral, I called him. He was the Ecclesiastes man. He was the man that knew how to work hard and enjoyed the fruits of his labor, enjoyed his little house, being able to come in from the heat into the air-conditioned house, sit down with a wife of his youth, enjoy a good meal, smile, and when the time came, due to illness and death, we lost our song leaders. He wasn't a song leader by any measure, but he stood up and he led songs as best as he could. He was the Ecclesiastes man. And that is not a bad thing. That's a good thing. So we see here that every time that eat and drink used, it's tied in with good. So anyway, I hope this has been useful in understanding Ecclesiastes. There's so much more that can be said in the book. There are so many lessons that are therein. We could break it down. As I said, although I didn't go to the actual passage, early on he says there is nothing better than to do good and enjoy the fruits of your labor. Talked about that that's what it's all about. And we all know how the book ends. Sadly, some people think that's the only good part in the whole book. When finally this man who was living in debauchery and in deep depression, finally at the last minute something came to him. Oh yeah, fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. Teaches us that. And he says that in effect all the way through. Starts off telling us to do good and to enjoy these things. But he praises labor. He praises doing good. He praises all these good things. The very lifestyle that you would like to see your loved ones live, to some degree, that's what he's talking about. You want them to see them in the church, of course, first and foremost. Sometimes that doesn't happen. But they've got loved ones and they've got food on the table. And it doesn't get better than that. All right, the end of that. Nothing said tonight to tell us what to do to become Christians. Everybody here understands. Everybody knows. We again will have the opportunity, as the song is sung, to come forward for the prayers of the congregation on anything you might need. And I appreciate your attention this night, and I apologize for running over. And with that, at this time, let us stand and sing the song selected.